Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the King and AI podcast. My name's Kelly Cates and you'll be listening to my dad, Kenny Dalglish, on this podcast and getting his thoughts on football issues about Liverpool, but also about other things as well. And the reason the podcast has come about is because of our family's charity, the Marina Dalglish Appeal, which was set up to raise money to help cancer patients and their families. So if you'd like to support that, that would be fantastic. As much as it's about raising awareness, it is also about the financial support, if possible. If you want to donate, you can go to anfieldindex.com/MDA, or you can go to the Marina Dalglish Appeal website to find out a little bit more about the charity and the work that they do. It's worth having a read about. It's a really great charity and it's something that's very close to all our hearts. Enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Eddie Gibbs and welcome to another episode of the King and AI podcast here on Anfield Index Pro. Now, we had promised to try and make a point of bringing you this show on a monthly basis, so figuring it's the bore fest of the international break, it seems like the ideal time to reflect on things without those pesky Liverpool matches getting in our way. And we are, though, without one member of our starting lineup, suffered a blow on the absence of a certain Mr. Paul Dalglish, though we do have an excellent substitute lined up today. Paul is busy preparing for a trip to Atlanta with his Miami FC side this weekend on the back of a remarkable 4-0 draws in a row. So good luck to Paul and the guys over there. Hopefully his boys can rediscover their goal scoring touch. Without further ado, allow me to introduce to you the duo who will undoubtedly be basking in the glory of Liverpool taking maximum points from their 8 league matches so far, but also offering a wry grin, no doubt, at the plight of some of our rivals. First up, it's the man who fits in watching as many Liverpool matches as he can around as many golfing and FIFA arcade game commitments. Yes, it's Liverpool's legendary former player and manager, Sir Kenny Dalglish. How are you, sir?
Very well, Edward. But I must correct you already, and we're only 30 seconds into the show. Paul's won 16 and drawn 1 of the last 17 games.
See, so the Miami FC website needs a fix in because it's got 4-0 draws in the last four games. So I've done you a disservice there, Paul. So I know you'll be listening, and I apologise for that. Thankfully, man's on hand to fix the error.
I hope you're going to record this and send it to him.
Hey, I won't edit it out. So I'm pretty sure Paul will have a little chuckle to himself when he realizes I've just been looking at the website and not phoning him to congratulate him on these draws.
Well, and I don't think he would pull you up on it either.
Probably not. It's too humble for that. And next up in for Paul is the first ever guest on the King and AI podcast. And it's a man who really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. Almost certainly the conduit to the way many of you get your first dibs on your Reds breaking news. And remarkably, a man that joins the show without either increasing or decreasing the 102 international caps or the 501 Liverpool appearances between the three of us on the show. Yes, it's a familiar voice to listeners of our Media Matters podcast on AI AI Pro, and a warm welcome to the Athletic Zone LFC reporter, Mr. James Pearce.
Morning, Ed. How are you?
I'm very well, James. I know you're having a little bit of downtime with the international break, but we were speaking off air before, and the Athletic do things slightly differently, don't they, during the international break? And there's been no shortage of articles coming out from you this week.
Yeah, I think you know, quite rightly, the Athletic see it as a kind of a real time of opportunity, the international break, when, you know, I think especially Liverpool fans probably not too much interest in the international fixtures. So a big opportunity to crank up the club coverage and try and get it out there. So, obviously no press conferences or matches to attend this week, but still plenty going on and, you know, building up to a massive game at Old Trafford next weekend.
And Gags mentioned to me as well at the top of the show there that it would be worth mentioning that you can sign up to the Athletic through Anfield Index. That's theathletic.co.uk/theAnfield Index. And I think there's an opportunity to get a week free or something, or a month free, I think it is, and a couple of about 50% discount on your annual subscription there. So do take note of that link. There's some really excellent content, and we're going to discuss some of that today. Now, before we get the ball out, it is important to reiterate what Kelly Kate said at the top of the show there, and remind all our listeners that the key objective of this podcast is to raise awareness and help with fundraising for the Marina Dalglish appeal. Thanks to all our listeners who have made donations so far, and as we mentioned on the previous show, as a result of the collective donations to the appeal, there is now £1.25 million worth of equipment for use in Liverpool's hospitals fighting back against breast cancer, one of which has funded the latest Da Vinci 6 robot at the Broad Green Hospital and a new vacuum-assisted biopsy machine in the breast unit of the Aintree Hospital. And it was great to see Kenny and Lady Marina on the new having a look at the new equipment, visiting the hospital, taking a look at the robot and seeing firsthand the benefits it will offer to so many people. And please remember, you can help support the Marina Dalglish appeal. It's very easy to do. Just head on over to anfieldindex.com/MDA and pledge whatever you can, even if it's just a small amount, using the monthly donation option to help boost the funds for this fantastic appeal. Now, you must have been thrilled to visit the Broad Green Hospital, Kenny, not only to see the equipment, but also to meet the people who are very much on the front line of this battle against this dreadful disease.
Yeah, it was prostate the Da Vinci machines in there for, and it was fantastic. The hospital were really thrilled with the equipment because it's quite innovative. There's only a couple in the UK and they've got one of them, so it's transportable as well. You can move it about from hospital to hospital. If somebody was in the Royal, they could move it over there and they could operate on them using the robot. But there was a chap there as well who, like, 2 weeks after the robot was put in and they'd been practicing how to use it on dummies, I would say, no, on real people. He, the guy got operated on, and if it hadn't been that machine, he probably wouldn't have been here now. So it just shows you how important and how grateful we are to the people who have made any contribution whatsoever to the charity. Where the money goes is exactly where they would like it to go, to help people. And that's a prime example of how much it helped this chap, and it did actually save his life. So, yeah, it was thrilled, and it's great if you can put something back in the people that have been so good for us in the years gone by.
And James, you must have seen the work of the Marina Dalglish appeal, certainly living locally in recent years. It must be something that, as a Liverpool supporter like myself, it must make you very proud to see Sir Kenny and Marina getting involved to this extent in such a brave campaign to try and raise money for this disease.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely phenomenal what they've done for thousands and thousands of people. You know, from across Merseyside, I had the honour of being at the ball last year for the charity, and hearing more firsthand about what they do and being part of what was an amazing night of kind of a celebration, really, of all the work, and met some absolutely inspirational people along the way. So it's, you know, Kenny and Marina have, you know, they've given back unbelievably, haven't they? You know, Kenny will always be, you know, coveted and honoured by Liverpool fans, and cherish him for what he gave the club on the field and in the dugout. But the legacy stems a long way beyond that, with the difference they've made to so many people's lives.
Well, our daughter Lauren, she's taken over from her mother now. She's her boss when it comes to the charity, and I suppose many other things as well. But she looks after it. So Marine and I chip in when we're asked to chip in, or when we need to chip in, and it's been a family affair. But it's no, it might be our name on it, but there's an awful lot of people who have made it the success that it has been. And the people who have benefited have been the ones that have been treated with the equipment that we've put in. So we'll push onwards and upwards, and Lauren will find something that's going to be beneficial to patients. It might not be there, and we'll do our best to raise the funds for that as well. And with everybody's help, then I'm sure we'll be successful.
Yeah, so as a reminder to donate to the charity, it's anfieldindex.com/MDA and just pledge whatever you can. It really is much appreciated. Now, we'll move on to the football, and obviously it's a landmark week in some ways for the club, with it being 4 years since Jurgen Klopp took the reins. And Kenny, as someone who's managed the club not once but twice yourself, other than that Champions League victory in Madrid, what would you say is the most impressive thing that Jurgen has achieved so far?
I think the greatest achievement for Jurgen is the club's back and been run the way that it was run in Shankly's time and immediately afterwards. When we were having all the success and people were proud to be part of the club, and the people in the club were proud to share that with the people that support the club. And it really was a community club. And I think it lost its way for a wee while. On the street and on the terraces, but I think it's come back. And since Jurgen's come in, it's been brilliant the way he's pulled everybody together, got everybody together. And it doesn't matter what your role is at Liverpool, however small you might think it is, it's equally important to him because he values him as much as anybody else. So he's made everybody feel important, he's made everybody feel wanted. And he's really pushed the club back to where it was. And I don't think it's a coincidence that because of that, the success on the pitch has been excellent as well. So I think that's his greatest achievement, getting the club back to be run the way that it was run many years ago.
Kenny, had you met Jurgen before he took over at Liverpool?
No. No, I hadn't met him.
Do you remember the first time you met him?
No, I remember when it was the day he was appointed. I was going up to open a charity place just at Celtic Park the day that he was appointed. And obviously the television cameras were there. And I said I think we should fasten our seatbelts. This is going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride for us all. We're off and we're running. So fortunately, it's turned out to be like that. It's been successful as well. And I don't think they could have had a better guy in charge.
Yeah, he just seems the absolute perfect fit for the club, doesn't he? In terms of the way in which, you know, certainly from the dealings I've had with him, like one of the biggest things for me is the way in which he's galvanised all the supporters. Because you know yourself, Kenny, how powerful that support can be when you've got everyone fully united behind you.
Well, there was a wee bit problem they thought we were going to have when the new stand opened. They thought it might take away the atmosphere at the ground.
Yeah.
But I remember the first game it opened. The new stand, the people in the stand started the singing off. And it's just grown from there. But I think you can feel, it's not just because they're undefeated this year, but during his tenure there, you can feel the difference in the atmosphere with the people that come along there. You can feel that they want to be there and they appreciate that the club are showing appreciation to them for being there. And I think more and more the people are starting to feel part of it, and so they should be, because they're a very important part of it. They're there when the players have needed them on the pitch. So the supporters can take huge credit for that as well, because when they know, and they've not always played as well as they can, but when they need them, they've been there, and that helps you get over the line.
Yeah, how important do you think the brand of football is as well? Because what he's produced at Liverpool seems kind of perfectly in keeping as well with the club's traditions.
No, I think the way that he plays, coming in October, wasn't it the best time to start for him? Because I think once the next year when he got the pre-season, he got his training up to speed, then the players could adopt the way that he wanted to play, the high pressing game, the high intensity of the game, and I think that's taken maybe a couple of pre-seasons to get up to speed with how he really wanted it. But even before that, I mean, there was a huge improvement before that as well. So he's got it the way he wants it now. He's worked very hard to get there, and the players have gone along with him. And I don't think there's anybody that's in the dressing room that doesn't want to be there. You don't get many problems. You don't get many players speaking out of turn. And I think it's easy to do that probably when you're winning. But even when it wasn't going as well, there was still nobody spoke out of turn, because they totally respect the man. They totally respect the football club. And it's him that's giving everybody that thought that you must respect people and appreciate people. And if you're not playing, then don't spit your dummy out. Just take it properly. You're not playing for a reason. And the reason is because there might be somebody better there that on the day that he thinks can win them the game. So I think it's been fantastic what he's done.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, recruitment has been key, hasn't it, to the progress that Liverpool have made. I mean, having money is one thing, but spending it wisely is another. And, you know, there's been a lot of shrewd deals, hasn't there?
Yeah, and there's been a lot of money come in as well.
Yeah.
When you think of Luis Suarez and Coutinho moving on and getting the sums of money they got, that's over 200 million for those two. So they've got some money in, but the support from the owners has been fantastic as well. They're no shy, they're no averse to putting their hand in their pocket. Look at the development at Anfield. Look at the new place that's been built down in Kirby for the training ground, selling Melwood and moving to Kirby so everybody's in the one area. I mean, they've never been shy of spending money. And that the support you get financially is important as well. With Michael Edwards and the backroom staff scouting the players and Jurgen deciding who comes in, I think it's worked really well for everybody.
Well, move on and look at where we are in the league situation just now. Obviously, Liverpool, that 8 wins from 8 before heading to Old Trafford after this international break. And whenever we do this show, we like to sort of reflect back on Kenny's time, either as a player, as a manager. And there is a story from the past that's kind of made the headlines a little bit again this week. And the fact that Man United, when they were suffering from their own 18-year title drought back in 1985, they'd just won the FA Cup under Ron Atkinson and started the 85-86 season with 10 wins from 10 games. But then the wheels came off. Talismanic skipper Brian Robson was injured, as was his replacement Remy Moses. Mark Hughes seemed to lose his form on the back of a secret deal for him to go to Barcelona at the end of the season. And having won 13 of their first 15 league games, Man United won just 9 and lost 10 of their final 27, finishing fourth in a massive 12 points behind champions Liverpool, who in Kenny Dalglish's first season as player-manager won that first league and FA Cup double in England for the first time in 15 years. So without wanting to dampen anyone's spirits and put a negative spin on how positive this 8 wins from 8 has been and the table-topping excitement that comes with that, when we hear people say, Kenny, there are a lot of games to go, history tells us that they do have a point, don't they?
Yeah, but you can't compare our team now to the Manchester United team in 1985. Each team's got its own idiosyncrasies. It's got its own assets and downfall. But for us, they've won the 8 games because they've been maybe a wee bit fortunate for the goal at Sheffield United, and we got a last-minute penalty against Leicester. But the quality of this team is, I think you've got to admit, is far better than what Manchester United were in 85. And they can lose a game, but I can't see Liverpool losing too many points. I just can't see it. They're the attitude, the commitment, the decisions that Jurgen gets, most of them right. No, all of them. Obviously, nobody ever gets them all right, but he gets most of them right. And you're no complacent, you're no arrogant. I just think it's a fact. I don't see them losing too many games. You'll no lose a run of games. You'll no go three or four games at Anfield without winning. And the points have got 8 points ahead of Man City. Man City are depending already for somebody else to beat us, for them to be able to catch us. Even if they beat us twice, they still need somebody else to beat us. And that's allowing for them winning other games. I just, honest, it's really difficult for to see how it's going to happen. There'll be no complacency in any way, shape or form at Anfield. They'll go about their work as diligently and as enthusiastically as they've always done, on the pitch and off the pitch. So, for me, I think the start will be too great for anybody else to catch up. But that's not to say that you turn up and you win. You just continue to do what you've done. And I don't see them taking their foot off the pedal in any way, shape or form.
Now, on the back of what you've just said there, we've got a couple of questions that relate to this from our Anfield Index subscribers and podcasters. And Harinder Singh wanted me to ask you, Kenny, whether you've noticed any discernible change in our play from last season to this.
No, I don't see a change in the style of play. I don't see a change in the attitude of how we play. I don't see a change in any way, shape, or form. They're just what they were last year. Totally committed, enthusiastic, working as hard as they possibly can, and making many chances, taking most of them. I don't see any change. No, many. I don't see any. But the only thing you would say was they're probably better this year than they were last year. And that's worrying for people. If you're better than you were the year before and you only lost the title by 1 point, then... And last year, we lost because our head-to-head with Man City, they got more points than us. And also, if you go back to the game at Anfield, Mahrez misses a penalty when they're down to 10 men in the last minute. So, I think we're better than we were last year. And I think I don't think Man City are as good this year as they were last year. Despite the 8-0 victory over Watford, I don't think they're as good this year as they were last year. I think they've got problems at the back. The injury list is quite heavy defensively. And I think that's taking its toll on them. So, no, we don't need to worry about anybody else other than ourselves. And I'm sure that's what 100% concentration will be. Just get ourselves right and we can take it from there.
Kenny, you know, if you think back to January time when Liverpool had that, I think it was 6 or 7 points the lead in the Premier League table. And I remember Anfield for a few games suddenly became quite jittery. It was almost like everyone couldn't quite believe we were in this situation. And, you know, they wanted it so much that there was a few nerves around the place. You think about Leicester at home and it was like a little run of draws there where obviously the lead ended up disappearing and then City went on that amazing run to win the title. Do you think the experience of that and the experience of the whole of last season will ensure that we don't see that again, both in terms of on the pitch and off it?
Well, I think we've got more points now than what we had last year as well. At this time, we obviously must have. We've no dropped any.
Yeah.
So the number of points is more important than anything else, and you get them on the door early on. Then you're going to go away. It's up to other people to come. The other people have dropped points. City don't have the same number of points as they had last year at this time. They've dropped points. None of the other clubs. Maybe Leicester's better off than what they were this time last year. But Tottenham have faded away. Man U have faded away. The Arsenal are only the fourth they were, but I think they'll get better. So we're so far ahead of them, not just in points and where the game is. where our game is, what we're reaching, what the heights we're reaching, the quality we're producing, it's much better than anybody else. And I'm no trying to be overconfident or dismissive of anybody, but I just can't see us no winning the league. I just can't see it. I don't think the quality in the rest of the teams are as good as it was last year. And I think their quality's gone up. So if you get an even bounce of the ball, I think it's there for us.
Yeah. If you were looking at the squad, a lot of people would say, you know, if there's one concern, it would be if Liverpool lost one of the front three. If one of them was out for a significant period, you know, is the drop off too great? Is that a concern? Do you think, you know, the depth in that department might catch Liverpool out?
No, I think if you look at if you're going into the market to try and buy a player, and you're looking for a striker, who's going to come in? Who would you sign for Liverpool if you're not going to get a game? So that's, the front three are brilliant, but it makes it difficult to bring in a quality striker to sit on the bench.
Yeah.
And I think on the bench, you've got Divock Origi. Last year, Liverpool got more goals and assists from the substitutions they made than any other team. And you just need to think back to the Barcelona game. 1-0 at half-time. Divock scores.
Yeah. Gini came
on. Gini Wijnaldum scores. So one of them get two.
Yeah. Right?
So that's an example of when he brings on a sub, how important they are and how great a contribution they're making to Liverpool. They don't come on with a wee petty lip.
Yeah.
They come on determined to make a contribution, and they've done it. So I think the squad, yeah, you would have thought there might have been a few more people moved out at the end of last year. But no, they want to be there. And even although they're not playing as often as they'd like to play, they're enjoying being part of Liverpool Football Club, which is a great compliment to Jurgen and all his staff, that they want to be there and to the football club. So I think, yeah, if you got an injury to one of them, obviously your replacement's not going to be as good, or he would be playing. But then they might change the way he plays if he's not got the three guys up front. You've got a couple of youngsters on the verge of coming through. You've got the boys that played at MK Dons never did themselves any harm.
Yeah.
So, no, there's strength and depth there. But if you get a run of injuries, you're never ever going to have enough people to come in and support it. But there are people there that can come in and do a job. And I think, although maybe some people might get frustrated with the playing the young lads in the Carabao Cup or whatever, I think that's great for them because they get the taste and they get the feel and the experience of having played first-team football. It's in front of full houses. So that's helpful to the young boys. As long as they keep their head right, then there's no reason why you can't put one or two in over the space of a season and get the reward for it. And it helps them, it helps us. And there's some really good young players. So to find a replacement, you're not going to get a like for like. But the people come in will have the same principles and have been taught the same way as what the first team have been taught. And that's a great thing as well. Everybody throughout the club has got the same principles and how they expect them to play and how hard they expect them to work. So I think we can cope with injuries. There'll not be a problem. If you get a plague in them, then you're going to be in trouble. But then so is everybody.
Yeah. I suppose if you're Manchester City, if you're looking at Liverpool's schedule and trying to pinpoint where there might be a bit of hope for you, you're probably looking at the Club World Cup in December, aren't you? And, you know, that not an ideal time of year to be doing all that travel and going over there. Have you got any concerns at all that could dent the momentum?
Listen, if I'm Manchester City, any other team in the league, I'm going to look at myself first.
Yeah.
I can't control what's happening somewhere else, so why worry about it? Why get yourself involved? Just worry about yourself and get yourself right. And there's I think there's too many people that busy looking at other places that they miss the opportunity themselves to be successful.
Yeah. So you don't see the Club World Cup as being as getting in the way for Liverpool?
No. No. So it's two games. It's two games, isn't it?
Yeah.
It may be helpful to Liverpool. The boys that haven't been playing will probably play in that.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity to play them. I don't think the World Club Championship's prestigious anyway, is it?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're only saying that because you never won it.
Liverpool have never won it, have they?
No, it was more prestigious then than what it is now.
Yeah.
I just don't think it. I think if you look, it would be bottom of the table. It'd be behind the FA Cup, obviously the league and the European Cup, and also behind the Carabao. But how many fans are going to go and see it? They're watching the telly.
Yeah.
Whereas you're winning the other events, you can go to the finals. So it means more. I think it means more to the punters as well that you win domestically than winning the World Club Championship.
And as we've seen, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp have liked to do a bit of warm weather training in the winter as well. So maybe they'll double it up and try and do something around that as well. So I don't know if it can be as much of a negative as some of us think it might be. So hopefully some good can come from it in that respect.
But remember also, Ed, we've got a week off.
Of course, we've got this first winter break of sorts.
Yeah. So you've got that as well this year, which might not be a great help. If your fixtures are loading up, they maybe need to have a look at that and say, well, you can play your games then. You don't need to take a week off.
True. That could be a blessing in disguise. AI Pro subscriber Stephen Purdom from Panama, who's asked a question in the past to Kenny, he's asked, at some point, and hopefully way off yet, our unbeaten run will come to an end. As someone involved in similar winning streaks in the past, how was the atmosphere after a run came to an end? And do the games get harder the longer your unbeaten run goes? Can that become a burden in any way? And would your approach for the next game, what would be your approach for the next game preceding the end of a run?
Well, why would you change your approach to the games if it's taken you so far? I mean, they've won every game in the league so far. Why would you change your approach? Why would you change your preparation, your attitude, your commitment? Yeah, everybody would realise that there's very few times. I mean, I think Arsenal did it. The Invincibles never lost a game. Well, that's fine. But I don't think if you lose a game, it might even galvanise you. So for some people, it would take the monkey off your back. If you say, well, when are we going to lose? People keep expecting us to lose. And although you don't go out to lose, maybe losing the game would be beneficial. But I don't think it makes any difference that you've won, 10, 20 games in a row. The next game you go and play is where you've had your reward for winning the games. You know what you did to win those games. You've got to go out with the same attitude, the same commitment, right, on the pitch. If you don't, we've got a great chance of losing the game if we're no up for it. But also, losing the game isn't the end of the world because you've got 8 points ahead at the moment. You'd expect that to stretch. So going into the game after you've lost it and coming in the dressing room afterwards, it's a disappointment, but I don't think the disappointment is any greater than what it was whenever you lose a game. I mean, if you come in and you're happy in the dressing room after losing a game, I think there's something wrong with you. You come in and you're disappointed, and yeah, maybe during that run, you've had a bit of good fortune, and then maybe the game that you want to lose, you get the luck comes against you. You can't be lucky all the time. But you can be well prepared. Your attitude can be right for you to go and win the game. So as long as you're right in your head, you've done everything you can to go and win the game, I don't see what else you can do. And if you get beat, then you should be disappointed, and you will be disappointed. But it's not going to affect the rest of the season. I don't see Liverpool going on a run. The only time you say Liverpool have been on a run of losing games is the Champions League section. We lost four away games, haven't we?
Yeah.
That's the only thing you can look at and say, well, there you are. That's an example. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why that is. It's not because they've changed their attitude or their commitment or anything, their principles. It just happens. But I don't see it happening in the league.
No, I agree. I just think also this group of players, when they have had setbacks, not that they've come around that often, but every time they've responded massively positively. You think to a lot of questions were asked after Kiev, weren't they? How would that group of players come back from that? Would that, you know, derail things? You know, how would they get over that disappointment? Were they channeled it in the best possible way? And then similarly, having just missed out on the Premier League title last May, everyone said, you know, well, what kind of impact would that have on the Champions League final? It didn't at all, did it? It just made them even more hungry to go and lift that trophy. They did it, and they've, you know, it's been a magnificent start to this season. So now, I mean, we all know that this run can't go on forever. Liverpool, there will be a time, probably not too far off, when Liverpool don't win, but I've got no doubt that they'll dust themselves off and respond positively again.
Well, an undefeated run isn't as important as the league championship, is it?
Yeah.
And one will lead you to the other. If you're undefeated, you'll win the championship. No danger. Especially the way they stand at the moment. So the end game is more important than any one individual game. And collectively, you get more points than anybody else. It doesn't matter if you've gone through undefeated. It only matters that you're top of the table and you get that wee trophy at the end of the season. And the players walk away with that wee badge that says winners. That's the most important thing.
Now, we always know on this show that one of the things that gets some of the most debate and the most feedback that we get on the show is when Kenny and Paul sort of start kicking off at each other when it comes to talking stats. And Kenny loves a good stat, as everyone knows. And our own sports scientist, Simon Brundish, has been sharing some insightful stats on social media this week. So I wanted to throw them down and see what Kenny makes of these. So cue yourself for a response here. So Liverpool have racked up 97 points last season and won the Champions League. They're currently 8 wins from 8 in the league with a Super Cup in the cabinet. This is the first Liverpool team to average 2.55 points per game over a season, and also the first Liverpool team to total 101 points from their past 38 games. To put that into context, in 1984, the side featuring a certain Kenny Dalglish won the league, but only took 1.9 points per game, though we did also win the European Cup and League Cup that season. So Kenny, with these numbers, does this make Jurgen Klopp's current Liverpool side the best Liverpool side of all time?
They will be if they win the league. Does the stat take into account the quality of the teams that they're playing against?
That did come up in the debate afterwards. That's a very, very good point. I mean, they're out against the juggernaut, obviously, and Man City in this era.
And also, does it take into account anything else other than actual points won? It doesn't matter what the stats are, right? If somebody says that's the greatest, it doesn't matter. You've only got to beat the people you're playing against and amass more points than anybody else to win the league. That's the stat that matters most to me. If you finish with more points, they can argue about the quality of the opposition. They can argue about whether it was a better team or a worse team. It's not a problem. But you need to have something at the end of the in May that says winners on it for it to be a successful season. And I think we'll get that this year.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it, comparing teams from different eras. I mean, you know, you think back to some of the years when Liverpool had the title wrapped up, you know, weeks before, you know, the end of the season, and you know, and inevitably the foot gets taken off the gas a little bit and you don't end up with quite as many points as you would have done. So yeah, this can only be classed as the greatest Liverpool team ever, if they go on and win, I think probably more than one title. I think, you know, the I've been watching Liverpool since the mid 80s, and you know, still the greatest team for me is the one of the late 80s, probably, you know, you think around 87, 88, you know, that I still think this team have got to go on and win the title and then probably win it again, I think, to surpass that.
By the way, the stats are an indication of how good they are, right? And the stats are fantastic. But then, what's the quality of the opposition? There's two teams run away with it last year, 98 and 97 points. I mean, that's unbelievable for both clubs to get that many points. So what's the rest of them? They keep saying that the Premier League's the most competitive league. Well, is it more competitive because of the fact that the teams are good, or is it because they're bad? Is it the best quality league? I don't know. I think it's the best entertainment. I think it's the best commercially. But I don't know if it's the best league. I think the Spanish would run you close, but they've tailed off as well now. And I would have thought that for Liverpool, they'll not worry about they've got 101 points over 38 games. They'll worry about they're sitting there first. If you win it with a point, what's the difference if you've got 101 or 91? Just win it. Eddie, what's the stats for it? Doesn't get you any points.
It just tells you
how good you are. And we know how good they are. And you're not trying to undermine them in any way, shape or form, or disregard any of the success of it, because they've been brilliant. And the numbers only, they stack up and they endorse what you're saying. But you still need that winner's thing. If somebody beats you with 1 point for the league, or somebody beats you with 10, you still finish second. So it's just about winning. And I thought Jürgen's the type that wants to win everything. So it wouldn't matter to him 1 or 10 if you're second.
Now, looking back to that last title win under yourself in the hot seat as manager, there was a reminiscence piece on The Athletic this week by one of James's colleagues, Charlie Eccleshare, and it catches up with Ronnie Rosenthal. If you want to go and read that on your Athletic subscriber, you'll find it in the Liverpool section as well. And I think James tweeted it yesterday as well. So do go and have a look at James's Twitter. It's at JamesPierceLFC. And this is all about Ronnie Rosenthal, obviously. And the sad news, obviously, that his home was burgled, his London home was burgled back in May. Ronnie's now working as a football consultant and scout. And there's some excellent info on some of the stuff in his past there, and even Cristiano Ronaldo and the likes. So do go and have a listen to that. But he's fondly remembered by Liverpool fans as the man who propelled Kenny's 1990 team to that final title win all those years ago. And he joined the club on loan from Standard Liège in Belgium late in the season after a short trial with Luton Town. He scored 7 goals in 8 games, but still didn't play enough games to be given a league winner's medal, which I found quite incredible. And Ronnie said, "I have very fond memories of my time at Liverpool. I was not with Kenny for long, but he was someone who wanted to play beautiful football. And yeah, he was very, very, very clever." So Kenny, what are your recollections of that Ronnie Rosenthal transfer? Obviously, coming in late in the season, which was very rare, a time where you really needed him. What were your expectations when he arrived, and how did that transfer come about?
I think it's a bit of mistaken identity there with Ronnie. Sure, that was me he was speaking about. Jesus, does he want to see a couple of reports? School reports, see if you're very clever. No, we needed an injection of goals to seize over the line and get towards the end of the season. And somebody flagged up Ronnie's name, had a look on tape, see how he fared up, and he could score goals. And when he came in, he didn't half make a contribution. He was, I don't think it's a miss to say that if we never had his goals, we wouldn't have won the league. We could beat the semi-final with Crystal Palace Aston Villa. And then we went to play Charlton Athletic at Selhurst Park in the midweek after the game. Rushy wasn't fit with a load of injuries. So he ended up starting and John Barnes was up front beside him. And he scored a hat-trick, we won 4-0. And it was an original hat-trick. A header, a left-footed one and a right-footed one. And then I think he scored in a 1-0 victory. I'm not sure if it was Wimbledon or not. At Anfield, we won 1-0. And he scored a goal out of nothing. So Ronnie made a invaluable contribution to winning the league for us. He saw us over the line. And he was a good lad. And then I think we signed him permanently in the summer. And then it's a shame that he's more famously known for hitting the crossbar against at Villa Park than he is for scoring the goals that got us over the line to win the league. But still, at least he's not got a winner's medal, but he's got the memories and he's got the knowledge that we know that he made the contribution to us to win the league.
Yeah, so brilliant memories from Kenny there. So do go and have a look at that piece on The Athletic. It really is worth your time to lull over some of the stuff that Charlie Ecclesiastes speaks to Ronnie about in that piece. Now, we'll close off by talking about the plight of some of our rivals, because that's been something that I know Liverpool fans have quite enjoyed. I mean, it was an incredible weekend, not just Liverpool getting that win over Leicester in the circumstances they did, but then what we saw happen, obviously, to Man City, which we spoke about earlier in the show, and obviously Spurs had a bad day just before we played. Man United had a dreadful weekend, and our friends over the road at Stanley Park aren't having the best of times as well. So I'll kick this started with James if I can, and I'll ask you about Man City, James. They do seem to be blowing that bit hot and cold, and is there an impact on not replacing Kompany, do you think? And obviously that's been exasperated by Laporte suffering this injury. I mean, we talk about this vast resource that Man City have in terms of cash, but yet they chose not to purchase Harry Maguire and replace Kompany last summer.
Yeah, I do. I definitely think they've paid the price for mistakes they made in the summer window. You know, although Vincent Kompany didn't play a huge amount of football in the last few seasons because of the injuries he's had, he was still a massive leader in that dressing room. And you think of, you know, obviously there was the absolute rocket he scored against Leicester that effectively won them the title last season. But it's more, I think, what they've lost off the field in terms of having someone with that kind of presence and aura around them. And then you're right, yeah, Laporte. I think you kind of knew when Laporte got injured that was going to be a huge miss for them, because it's kind of laid bare the mistake they made in the summer, not investing heavily in another frontline centre back. And I'm just not convinced Guardiola even really believes himself in the other options that he's got there. And you know, that was a truly horrendous result for them at home to Wolves, because you know Wolves are no mugs, but let's not forget Wolves had had a really grueling European trip to Istanbul. City had had an extra 2 days to prepare. To get turned over at home like that, especially having seen Liverpool score a last minute winner the day before, they have got issues. And you know, of course, you know they've still got quality, in abundance in terms of you wouldn't put it past them going on another long winning run. But as Kenny said earlier on, I just don't think City this season are the same force that they were last term.
Look, I don't think they are either, obviously. I'm repeating myself, but I don't think they've got the cutting edge that they had last year. I know they get 8 against Watford, but even the Wolverhampton game, Wolves were in 3 times in the first half. Misplaced passes, mostly from Man City, and were off, and they missed 3 good chances. They could have been up before half time, and then the second half they pressed forward and a couple of breakaways, and Traore finished them very well. But it's not only Laporte they're missing. John Stones has gone missing as well. I don't know where he's not been playing, has he?
No, I think he's had an issue as well, although I'm not convinced that Guardiola has got complete faith in him either.
But it doesn't matter where he's got faith. It was an option for him.
Yeah. Well, he's got Fernandinho playing there, hasn't
He's got for aye, not a Mendy.
Yeah.
So I don't. And Mendy, the left back they bought for Monaco, he's not been. He plays two games and then he's out injured, doesn't he? He missed most of last year. He played a couple this year. He's out again. I just think that they're. I think they're struggling a wee bit, and if, as I say, they get a wee bit frustrated if they don't get the cutting edge in front of them, and they get caught on the break, the Wolves. But I tell you, Raheem Sterling's as good as a player that they've got there, and they missed De Bruyne as well against Wolves.
Yeah,
it was fantastic creating goals, and I think that was a big miss. He's probably a bigger miss than the centre backs. Because of that much of the ball, he could probably get away with it, you know, having too much quality at centre back until they play against a team that's been able to withstand them and maybe catch him on the break with Traore's pace, or they get up against him, they stand up to them and they go and put a bit of pressure on the centre backs. But I would have thought De Bruyne is a bigger miss than the centre backs.
And with Spurs, James, they do seem to have lost their way a little bit since that loss to us in that final out in Madrid. There's rumours that several players want to leave the club. Obviously, Trippier was sold and didn't seem to be replaced. Pochettino seems to have lost something of his motivational swagger, which was something you were always able to associate him. Do you think he can turn it around?
I think it's going to be difficult for him. I think there was a great piece on The Athletic earlier on this week, actually, on... kind of a behind-the-scenes look at where it's all gone wrong. And I think you kind of sense it from Pochettino's post-match interviews in recent weeks that he doesn't seem to have that kind of same air of belief and confidence about him that carried Tottenham so far last season. I mean, they surpassed all expectations getting to the Champions League final. But, you know, there seems to be some suggestions that, you know, he works the players incredibly hard, that the players are almost sick of, you know, the constant monotony of just how tough the schedule is and not having enough time off, and players moaning privately that, you know, that they're psychologically and physically shattered. And, you know, he's had an absolutely torrid few weeks, hasn't he? And, you know, we add into the mix, you know, Lloris dislocating his elbow and, you know, the embarrassment of conceding 7 to Munich, and then, you know, a relatively straightforward Premier League fixture where you'd expect them to produce a response, and they got humiliated again. So yeah, they've got big problems, and you know, it just kind of adds to the fact that, you know, people talk about the big six in the Premier League, but to be honest, this season it's a big two, because the gap between the top two and the rest is just absolutely vast.
I think it's strange, isn't it? When you have a bad run, there's all sorts of stories come out of dressing rooms about how disenchanted it is and how unhappy players are with this, that and the other. And they're probably doing exactly the same this year as they did last year. Last year they had a great season. They get the Champions League final. They had come back from nowhere against Ajax in the second leg in Amsterdam to get there. So, I mean, what's changed? Something's not the training. That's only, if they did it last year and they got the success, surely you would say, well, that's the proper way to go about it. Look how successful we've been. Rather than moan about it now because you're not winning games. There's something else going on. And whatever it is, the club seems a bit disenchanted on the pitch at the moment. Last year they seemed to be a bit more compact than they are this year. They seem wide open. The pitch seems awful big for the opposition to play in. And I don't think they've not reached the heights this year as they did last year. And I think simply because maybe the attitude of the players. Pochettino must take some responsibility for that. But they can't turn around and say, because the training's hard, that's why we're playing rubbish this year. The training was hard last year and they did brilliantly. So there's something underlying there that I don't know what it is. I think Pochettino's a fantastic footballing man. he might have been disappointed with the defeat in the Champions League. Maybe if that's affected him or not, and it's carried on into this year, I don't know. But there's something deep lying there that's causing the problems. And I don't think it's healthy to carry that onto the pitch. Lloris dislocating his elbow, I don't think that's a loss for them, really. I think the other goalkeeper's as good as Lloris. So they did make a signing, a midfield player in the summer, didn't they? The French boy.
Ndombele.
He looks half decent, but then you've got to stop other teams playing. Last year they earned the right to play by the work they put in and preventing other teams from playing. This year, I don't see them stopping teams playing. I mean, Bayern Munich must have been very, very embarrassing for them to lose 7 goals. I don't think they had much. I don't think they had many more shots at goal, did they? They only had about 8 or 9 shots at goal. 7 went in.
Yeah.
I mean, that you could write it off as saying it's just a one-off. But by the way, you'd like to have seen a bit more disappointment from them on the pitch than what there was. They just seemed to, Bayern Munich just seemed to run over them.
Yeah, I think he's got issues, hasn't he? Because Eriksen clearly wanted to leave in the summer. I think he's had a bit of a strop of that. He didn't get the move he wanted. And then, and I think even someone like Dele Alli, you know, what's happened to him? You know, someone who was regarded as one of English football's biggest young talents, a key member of that team. And you know, he's gone kind of way off the boil. You know, he's not even getting his game at the moment, is he? So, yeah, the problems are stacking up for Pochettino.
So, the gift that keeps on giving as far as Liverpool fans concerned, Man United's form, whilst we're winning 8 from 8, they are really struggling. And they seem to very much pin their colours to the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer flag, James. And whilst we'll still expect a tough game at Old Trafford next week, AI subscriber Dale asks, looking at the stats, everyone's saying that Man United are in relegation form. So he wants to know if James thinks they're too good to go down.
I think they are narrowly good enough too good to go down. But do you know what? They at the moment they've got an air of a mid-table team around them. I don't even, you know, having watched a fair few of their games this season, I think they're genuinely going to struggle to finish in that top six. You know, they are an absolute mess, and I know there's been, you know, the reports and stories have come out of Old Trafford this week, adamant that they're still fully behind Solskjaer, and that, you know, there's talk of them being committed to his 3-year vision and backing him in the next few transfer windows. But I'm not sure I buy that, to be honest. I'd be surprised if he was still in charge there at Christmas. You know, I think the only thing that might buy him time is almost a realization that there's so much wrong at United that I don't think anyone would necessarily believe that changing the manager would actually change all that much, because, you know, we talk about recruitment earlier on, and, you know, it's an absolute mess the way they've gone about things, and you know, spent a huge amount of money in certain positions with Wan-Bissaka and Maguire, obviously. But, you know, now you've got a situation where, you know, he's bringing on, you know, unproven kids off the bench, because, you know, striking wise, I don't know how you let Lukaku go, you know, and Sanchez, although obviously Sanchez wasn't, you know, particularly contributing much, but then not replace either of them was just absolutely baffling. So yeah, you know, that defeat up at Newcastle to a team that has had big problems themselves just laid bare what an absolute mess United are in at the moment.
I thought that the first game of the season at home to Chelsea, it was nip and tuck early on in the game, and then United scored, ended up winning 4-0. But I don't think it was really a reflection on the game, the result. But I thought in that game, the front three looked really impressive. Martial, James, and what's his name? The Manchester boy.
Was it Rashford?
Rashford, right? The three of them up front. And I thought, Jesus, the second half they sat back, Chelsea attacked them, they caught them in the break, and the pace was unbelievable. It was frightening. the pesos they've got. But then, since then, they've just gone backwards. And they have signed. They signed three players in the summer, didn't they? Wan-Bissaka, Maguire and James.
Yeah.
But I think the right back position illustrates they also, Mourinho signed a guy for, was it Porto? The right back, Dalot.
Yeah.
A young boy for 30 odd million. Then they go and spend, he's 19 or 20. Then they sign one, a new manager comes in. He just obviously doesn't think he's up to it. He signs Wan-Bissaka for Crystal Palace for 50. So you spent 80 million on the right fullback position. That's the problem you get when you keep changing managers. A different manager will have a different opinion to some players, and he'll look to replace them, irrespective of whether they were bought for a lot of money or not. And I think they're going to have to either stick by him and give him the support, or they need to get short. And the sooner they get short, I think the less pain they'll feel financially. Because if Ollie was to stay there, and I'm not saying he should or he shouldn't, but if he was to stay, they're going to have to give him money to buy. If they're not sure about him, then they'll give him half the money, because he'll keep another half for the next guy coming in. And you can't operate like that. And I think within the dressing room area as well, there must be problems. There was problems last year, which were well aired. Getting rid of Lukaku, I thought it was quite reasonable to get rid of him and get the money they could if they were going to replace him. And obviously they think that the front three that started against Chelsea was the way they wanted to play, and that was adequate replacement for him. Rashford playing up front, or Martial playing up front, and the other two down the side. I thought they looked half decent. They have problems, and I don't know how they're going to solve it, but I hope they don't find an answer before Sunday. but they're still, don't know. I mean, Manchester United, because you're Manchester United, obviously doesn't mean to say you don't get relegated. They were relegated years ago when nobody ever thought they would go down. But as they know the force that they hoped they would be or thought they would be this year. So they're not going to be relegated. There's worse teams than them, I think. But it's a problem for them, and it's one that they need to solve quickly. I mean, you hear them talking about criticising the board because of the signings they made. But the board don't make the signings, I don't think, do they? Surely the board would only supply the money for the manager to decide who he wants to sign. Now, if that's not the case, they do have problems. But I don't think that is the case. I think the manager chooses the players and they sign them. I don't think it's complicated. I think it's pretty straightforward. Now, if the manager picks the wrong players and they're not successful, then the manager's got a problem.
And one such team that is doing a bit worse than Man United is our neighbours at Everton. Now, we've run out of time to discuss them today, so we'll not get into that. But if they are still hovering around that relegation zone in the next episode of The King and I, we promise to to dedicate a few minutes towards what's gone wrong at Everton, and who knows what may change there. So we're not going to discuss that, and we'll draw a close to this episode of The King and AI. And as ever, please do give us your feedback. The best way is on our free Discord community. It's open to all Liverpool fans. You just have to go to anfieldindex.com/Discord, which is DISCORD. There's always discussion around this show on there, so do come along and join that. Alternatively, do tag us on to your feedback on Twitter. We're respectively at Kenneth Dalgleish, at James Pierce LFC, or to myself on at Eddie Gibbs or at Anfield Index Pro. And like a bad penny, these international breaks keep coming thick and fast, and whilst it will mean 2 weeks without the Reds in action, take solace from the fact that, all being well, the King and AI will return for another episode in November. And just in closing, that important reminder once again, if you enjoy listening to this show as much as we enjoy making it for you, then all we ask is that one thing. Please head on over to anfieldindex.com/MDA, where you can help by donating to the Marina Dalgleish Appeal. All that remains for me to thank the fantastic Mr. James Pearce for a fine debut performance on the show.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
Been a pleasure. And once again, to the incredible Sir Kenny Dalgleish, thank you for your time today, sir.
No problem, Edward. I miss Paul, mind you.
There was nowhere near as much disagreement as there normally is on this show. James towed the line far too diplomatically.
Paul makes me sound half intelligent.
Sorry about that.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and as ever, we'll let the show play out in the capable hands of Mrs. Kelly Kate. So goodbye from us.
Thanks very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. There is one more thing that you could do, but it doesn't really require any effort. If you use Amazon, if you go to smile.amazon.co.uk, there's an option to select a charity. If you select the Marina Dalgliesh Appeal, then every time you make a purchase at Amazon, they will make a donation to the charity. All you have to do is use smile.amazon.co.uk as your website to buy things from Amazon. It should, in theory, be quite straightforward. Thanks very much again.
Podcast Network.